Get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the snake pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the Snake Pit, Snake.
Sponsor? American Leak Detection. All right. So, welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to be here. So the other day, there was an article in the Dallas Morning News, and I'm going to throw you back in the Wayback Machine, because there's a name that's mentioned in here that I certainly remember as a kid, and I know I had his football card, but I don't really remember much about the name Cornell Green, the former Cowboy safety slash cornerback that, I guess when he retired, he started 145 games at cornerback, led the team in interceptions 4 times, 5 Pro Bowls back when that meant something. He was really good. Mm-hmm. And the article is more about Cornell Green, the person, though, and why he deserves to be in the Cowboys' Ring of Honor, I guess is what Tim Kalishaw was writing about. And I'm going to read you this paragraph, and this is what threw me into a tizzy, a loop, if you will. And it says that on January 1st, 1957, along with split-in Frank Clark, Green was one of the first black players to compete in the Orange Bowl, the New Year's Day Classic. And so you were literally at the time integrating these bowl games that had never seen a black player before. He says, that's the same day Syracuse's Jim Brown was starring here in the Cotton Bowl against TCU. How schools like the University of Texas would not permit black athletes on their team for more than a decade after this remains a shameful piece of local history. Which I think most people know that the last team to be all white and win a national championship was Texas. And that was in 69, maybe?
I believe it was 69. Yes.
Yeah, that was like the big shootout and all that. And we were like, well, they beat all the teams that had black players. Nice. Well, no, they played in the Southwest Conference, and there were maybe 2 or 3 black guys. SMU had Jerry Levias, I think, and it was just a bunch of white dudes. Like, that's it. That's why.
A bunch of country strong white dudes.
Right. That's why. That's for another conversation. But that got me thinking of, okay, if that happened, if Texas didn't integrate until 1970, who were the last teams to integrate?
In college football?
In college football.
Okay.
Just in college football. And you probably can guess. If you don't guess it right off the bat, you can guess in probably third or fourth try pretty easily.
My initial guess is BYU.
No. You need to think more Southern.
Yeah, for some reason I had it in my head, though, that they were fielding a white team, which is probably a very hurtful thing to say, but...
Ole Miss?
Yeah, so it's kind of a tie between Georgia, Ole Miss, LSU, and Alabama.
A tie?
They all kind of did it around 1972.
You go first?
Pretty much. And as you can imagine, back in the day, I mean, to me, this is what, like, freaks me out, is that this was going on when we were alive. Now, barely.
Yeah, speak for yourself, buddy.
But it was going on, like, right when we were tiny kids. And we probably, if we could have heard our grandparents watching college football when they're like, what is going on my TV? Right? Just freaking out because there's one black guy on the Alabama roster. Go ahead.
I just find that so odd that you would watch pro football and see how many of the prominent professional players are black, and then go to your university that same weekend and the idea of an all-white roster would be completely normalized to you.
I know.
Like, and that, so I just, that doesn't compute
at all. Like, how many MVPs did Jim Brown win up to this point?
Like, he was
already retired.
He was already retired.
Jim Brown's retired before Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss and Georgia allowed a black player to play for him.
That's really hard to believe.
Dude, it's unbelievable. So I'm like, all right, well, what happened? Which team was it that made this happen? Because I guarantee you it was the Spider-Man meme of like, I ain't doing it. You doing it? Hell no, I ain't doing it. You doing it? No! Well, there was a moment, and I never heard about this before. And the moment was Bear Bryant, who could see the future, and the future was not white guys, all white. And Bear Bryant was on a golfing trip with John McKay, who was the USC head coach.
A breakthrough in race relations happened on a golf trip, you say?
Right. And it's in the off season, and John McKay's talking to him about his team. And at the time, John McKay had 18 black players. OJ had won the Heisman 5 years ago. OJ. And if you've seen college highlights of OJ Simpson, it's unbelievable how great he was, obviously. Well, the Alabama Civil War bros, remember this is 1970, and so these are grandkids of people that fought in the Civil War. Hell, kids are still alive at that point who fought in the Civil War, and they think one way and one way only. Well, Bear Bryant's like, we're getting ready to get our asses kicked year after year after year, and it's never going to end. And I think for like 2 or 3 years in a row, Bama was like 5-6 and 6-5. But guess what? All white. This is just what we do. And so he asked John McKay if USC would come to Alabama to play in Tuscaloosa to open the 1970 season or 71 season. And they broker a deal. And apparently this was the Bear Bryant, like, I need to show everyone. Everyone needs to see this. And so this is the opening here of this cut. I went back and I started reading all about this game.
Okay.
And then there was a piece that ESPN had done that I found.
All right.
On this particular game that Jeremy Schapp did. And they open with the George Wallace line that is now infamous. He was the governor of Alabama, and this was only 7 years prior.
And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
This was Alabama in the 1960s. As the 1970s dawned, Alabama was still in the throes of the struggle for civil rights, and Bear Bryant's Crimson Tide was still all white. Then, Bryant asked his good friend John McKay of USC if he'd bring his Trojans to Birmingham to open the 1970 season. By 1970, USC had 18 black players on the varsity roster.
So, Alabama had none. And they barely had any black students, and that was what George Wallace was freaking out about, was allowing black students. And so, the Alabama way of thinking at the time was, all right, we're fine. Like, we're not doing bad. And so, as this cut explains, this was the way of Alabama thinking prior to this game.
Question was, if we can win without them, right? That's where some in the Alabama fan base were. Look, we're really good without that, so why do we want to do that?
Many have theorized that Bear Bryant had one singular motivation for scheduling USC: to demonstrate for Alabama's fans why the time for change had arrived.
Okay, so imagine having the balls. He never admitted this, by the way. This is all just speculation on why Bear Bryant would invite a team to his home turf to watch them get slaughtered. And the reason is because he had to convince these people that, look, we have to do this. If we want to compete, it's almost, I don't want to compare it to NIL, but it's almost like we're not doing NIL. Like
this is absolutely the one good thing about racism, which I've been besmirched for quite a bit on this radio station.
Yeah.
And I'll say it again. The great thing about the battle for racial equality is that there is athletic benefit in being welcoming to all. Your teams will be better. It's a great thing that has been built into this, which of course makes a funny drop, but it's true. The coaches who are thought-provoking about inclusion actually get the benefit of having better teams.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, what a great way to fight racism.
Well, what did Barry Switzer said it forever. And it sounds trite when he says it because you don't put the picture in the frame, but he would say in the late 60s, I recruited the black players. I knew what was going on, and I recruited them better than anyone else. And you hear that, and you're like, well, that's kind of like almost racist, you say. Well, that was groundbreaking at the time. You didn't just go out and recruit black players because you're in the South, and nobody recruited black players. That wasn't a thing. So here comes game time, and Alabama is really, really high on this team that they have rolling in there at the time. They're like, we got this. We're going to kick their ass. And then the game started.
Sam Cunningham, USC's backup fullback, entered the game on the Trojans' opening possession.
Our spring practice was tougher than that game. I mean, the holes looked like you could drive a car through them, and no disrespect to Alabama.
Our guys on defense were as tough as a $3 steak, and they just could not get him down.
Cunningham scored twice in the first quarter. He was unstoppable, as were most of his teammates, on offense and defense. The Crimson Tide, the pride of Southern football, got manhandled. The Trojan offense gained 559 yards. Sam Cunningham carried the ball 12 times for 135 yards. The final score, 42-21. If Bear Bryant had truly hoped the Trojans would make a point that was impossible for Alabama fans to misunderstand, they had, and then some.
At the end of the game, Bear Bryant was in the middle of the field with the biggest smile you've ever seen in your whole life, smiling, shaking McKay's hand. Did you ever see Bear Bryant smile after such a loss?
He knew. And it wasn't that close, by the way. 42-21 did not tell the story. And they racked up 560 yards of rush yards on them. I mean, they obliterated Alabama. And that was it. The next year, guess who's integrated? And then they did it. And then LSU did it. And then Ole Miss did it. And then Georgia did it.
Well, and one clarification, because this is like scholarship players and players, black players starting, because famously, and my wife always tells this story, that Ken, in his senior season, 1967, they did have a few walk-on black players, including a guy named Andrew Purnell. And there's a story about Purnell saying that, you know, it wasn't like we were ostracized, that everyone was just distant to us. No one talked to us until Ken Stabler came and talked to us.
Well, that's good to know. But yeah, I mean, I think that most people, like the first guy, I can't remember the name for the University of Texas guy that was the first player that was integrated. Whittier. Mm-hmm. Whittier, I think, is his last name.
I wish I could help you on that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. He was a guard. His name was Whittier. And no one wanted to room with him. So this is, again, 1970, 1971, and one of, I can't remember which the guy's name is that said, I'll do it. He was a senior. He's like, I'll room with him. And as he puts it, the white guy that roomed with him, I lost all my friends. He's like, but I didn't care because I knew what this was doing. And I think there were so many people that were aware of the moment. Probably Ken Stabler was one of them, aware of what this was. It wasn't just letting black guys on the team.
Yeah, knowing it's symbolic of what's happening in the entire country.
Exactly, exactly.
An article from that account is, Mr. Cunningham is famously said to have done more to integrate Alabama in 60 minutes of football than Martin Luther King Jr. was able to do in 20 years.
Dude, I believe it. It's as sad as that is. I believe that. But it's just such
they outgained Bama by 300 yards, and all six touchdowns were scored by black players.
Yeah. So you think that left an impact, an imprint? Like those people in the stands having to sit through that?
Where can we get some of them?
Well, and that's the other thing is you keep reading about this and then they decide to integrate and the people that turned in their season tickets at Alabama, like, uh-uh, I'm done. And again, that's our lifetime.
Well, and then think about how much after that was the hurdle of accepting a black quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Bro.
Oh, my God. This is crazy. Anyway, so yeah, reading about Cornell Green took me down
that
rabbit
incredible.
Hole.
That's incredible. I honestly didn't know anything about this story.
I didn't either. I didn't know anything about it, but that's kind of the how it all got started back in the early 70s.
Good stuff, Snake Pit.
All right. Thank you, Snake Pit listener.